Last Friday at the Wharton School in Philadelphia, I convened a day-long Media Future Summit of bosses and owners from throughout the media and marketing universe, all trying to figure out how to keep the lights on. What follows is an edited version of my conversation with our luncheon keynote speaker. As you face your audio device, he's the one on the left.
Alec Baldwin is a multimedia star, producer, and an activist. He isn't a powerful media boss, but he played one on TV. On 30 Rock, his Jack Donaghy was a besieged network executive willing to make any and all compromises for the sake of the bottom line. So it's pretty much a documentary. Anyway, what's happening here when Alec joins us is that I'm going to interview him about his hopes and fears for the media future. And for his podcast, Here's the Thing, Alec is going to interview me right back. I can't promise that this is going to be seamless or even coherent, but you will be witnessing some hot, hot two-way action. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Mr. Alec Baldwin.
Thank you for having me. I'm here, by the way, because I'm a big fan of his. I listen to On the Media, and I admire Bob, and I like how Bob gives them hell, so to speak, on the radio.
You are a great American. I'm going to go first, all right?
Sure.
All right. In the past 2 weeks, without even the benefit of a Google search, I have seen you reported on in the media 3 times. One was a Daily Mail paparazzi spread of you and your wife walking your infant in New York. Another was a scoop saying you won't be appearing in a film that a previous scoop had said you'd be appearing in. And the third was an in-depth takeout on your eldest daughter's tattoo. Now, understanding that celebrity, by definition, demands a certain surrender of privacy, how can you even sit here talking about the media without having a stroke or, at the very least, a grand mal seizure?
Well, there's the media, obviously, for people who are consumers of the media, myself, other people who, you know, I have a media diet of public radio and the New York Times and whatever online and the Journal and so forth. And then there's people who are subjects of the media for better or worse in whatever way, which everything you mentioned there is just, you know, some silly nonsense. But it's very difficult to separate my feelings about the media between the two. So, for example, when I lived in Los Angeles, I loved the Los Angeles Times. I admired the Los Angeles Times. The Los Angeles Times had, this is, and by the way, all this is opinion. My opinion. The Los Angeles Times, I thought, had wonderful coverage of Sacramento and the state of California. Their Sacramento page, their California pages was great reporting. And they covered Sacramento in a way that the New York Times refuses to cover Albany. And so I love the LA Times. Whenever I'm in Los Angeles, I read the LA Times. Right up until a woman in the LA Times wrote this scathing article about me in the paper, filled with all kinds of, you know, invective and opinion and so forth. And it's interesting how literally one affects the other. I sit there and I go, well, I'm not reading the LA Times anymore. I just don't, they're just off my media list now, you know what I mean? And it's kind of silly, I mean, in a way, but the two do contaminate the other. They do contaminate the other. Now, I want to ask you, one of the things that drew me to listen to your show, I mean, On the Media would come on, was your acerbicity, if you will. You know, you're a tough guy. I send people links to your piece about the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which I used to attend, and it was one of those events you'd be standing there going, why am I here, really? Why am I at the White House Correspondents'? I really don't get it. This is a kind of a, maybe not a very strong question, but like, why do you continue to do what you do and be on that field suited up and observing the media when you could just go and teach somewhere and write books and not have to really be on the front line of it that much? Why do you keep doing what you're doing?
I don't really care to come in.
Seriously.
We try to understand how the media works and try to figure out what's wrong with it. But, you know, I think everybody in America, especially on the Republican Party, believe the media is corrupted in any number of ways. And we don't necessarily disagree, but we institutionally as a program believe what's wrong with the media have nothing to do with what people think is wrong with the media. And a lot of that is wrong with the media, especially journalism, is laziness, pack mentality, the tendency towards stenography when covering major institutions in government as opposed to really hardcore journalism, and false balance, the false equivalency, which in bending over backwards to try to create objectivity with a capital O gives equal time to two sides that are not themselves intrinsically equal, like trying to cover the vaccine issue as if it were a scientific debate, like giving global warming deniers equal time with science and so forth, which has turned everything with the media's aiding and abetting every issue, including things that can be measured through science, turned everything into a political argument. And the world should not be viewed solely from an ideological or political perspective. Some things are just facts. And it infuriates me when some sort of artificial construct of neutrality ignores readily apparent facts. So does that help?
Well, the media has become like my primary business, which is in film. We would sit there 25 years ago and a movie would come out with Arnold Schwarzenegger and someone would make some disparaging comment. You know, a bunch of people who just got off the boat from New York and they just carried a spear at the Delacorte, and they're here in Hollywood, and they make some disparaging comment about Schwarzenegger. And the producer of our film would turn to us and say, "Don't do that." And everyone would kind of rear back. And he'd say, "No, no, don't do that." Or she. And they'd say, "Don't do that." Because when Arnold goes to work, 300 people in this business go to work on high-paying, skilled union jobs. Makeup, hair, drivers, payroll, accounting, location managers, on-set craft, cinematography, you name it, set design. And P.S., when Arnold's movie cycles out and all the revenue comes in and he's made $300 million in profit for Warner Brothers, $30 million of that, 10%, goes into a research and development budget that's going to develop the next movie you're in. So all of us sit there and go, you know, that's a good point. There's a lot of jobs at stake. You know, when I was at MSNBC, someone took me aside and said to me, "You have to understand, no one's watching this station." She goes, "However, a lot of veteran people who live in New York, in the New York area, who have children in private school," she said this to me this way, she said, "have children in private school. We are veteran news people who have jobs in television news. We've all worked somewhere else in more serious capacities. We all have jobs here because Phil Griffin created his hocus pocus that, you know, with carriage fees and whatever, where we all have a job here." So she literally looked at me and she went, "Shh." She said, "Don't complain about the sets and the, you know, all your complaining about how you want to make your show different from everything," which we did. We came in and we said, "Let's try to do something a little different than your shows where all the sets look like, you know, Soviet police stations and so forth." She was trying to help me, and she did help me, which was, everybody there, don't rock the boat. And that's kind of what's happening. My biggest complaint about what's happening in media, if you pressed a button and turned it all off that wasn't really worthy, you'd be killing a lot of jobs, I think. So can I ask you one now? When you talk about the chasm, if you will, between people's perception of what's wrong with the media and what's really wrong with the media, you know, for me, one of the biggest problems is that we don't have a place where people can go enough, I think, to have that conversation that's meaningful. You know what I mean? Where there's some kind of a forum. I mean, here we are in a room to have a serious discussion. Hopefully we can be lighthearted about it, about media. But where does it exist? The things that you object to in media, or the things that trouble you in media, where does it exist the opportunity to remedy that and fix that today? Where in the business or in academia or anywhere?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nub of the problem. We've been at it for 15 years, and I think we've done a really good job identifying flaws in the particulars and in trends and in sort of institutional structural problems. And we don't simply limit ourselves to media. We look at government and politics and civil liberties and really the society as a whole, but we're really, really good, if I may say, at identifying problems. And we're pretty good at getting people all pissed off. And they go on our comment section, and either they say, you are commies, or they say, you know, right on, because they're fellow travelers, and they perceive us as just another political voice. And when you realize that you're trying to do a rigorous, vigorous, serious approach at understanding problems and their provenance, and then you're just being perceived as just another voice from somewhere on the political spectrum, there's a tendency to want to curl up in the fetal position and just kind of whimper. Because you're really not contributing to anything. You're just giving other people an opportunity to huff and puff.
People still rely on you to tell the truth. They want you to tell them what's going on. In my lifetime, the number of people who want what you said, they want an articulation of their political view of the world to medicate them with. They wanted some pre-digested pablum that Fox provides for their audience. You know, there is no liberal equivalent. Who was that? Alan Combs. I mean, good God, that poor guy. What a thankless job that was to be the liberal half of that show with that horse's Hannity. I mean, who's a bigger horse's than Sean Hannity? He's the greatest horse's in the history of media.
Let me ask you a question, Alec. How would you characterize Sean Hannity?
Well, as they taught me in Washington when I went to college, I would employ the language of the 19th century legislators. I have the least amount of high regard for my colleague from Fox News.
Let me ask you one more thing.
Sure.
Because this is about media revenue and about the financing of news and information and the financing of entertainment and infotainment. They are all pretty much in jeopardy. As someone with a foot in both worlds, I want to know, which do you think, which crisis, the financing crisis for entertainment or the financing crisis for journalism, is going to have actually the biggest impact on the society, make America feel worse?
I don't know about feel worse, but I think like in entertainment, I think the next thing to crumble will be the bundling of television channels, the way we currently purchase television channels, and we'll get to a full-blown a la carte ordering of television, and you'll be able to call up your menu of channels you want piped into your home by satellite or by cable. And, I don't know, maybe a third of the stations that are on TV right now will go out of business. Or they'll be created in some other way. They'll stream online. You know, you'll have some other presence, like MSNBC. I mean, the MSNBC may go out of business. No, I don't say that with any malice. But that's a big thing that's going to happen in TV in this country. There's a lot of TV now that skates along with this kind of packaging that they do and bundling they do, and they have minimal audiences. As far as entertainment is concerned, I had a guy say to me that the Times is going to change radically in the next couple of years, maybe, let's say 10 years, that unless they get even more digital sales, you're going to have like a single section New York Times. It's going to be news, international and national news and business news, and everything else will be online. Entertainment and arts will be online. Sports will be online. Metro will be online for New Yorkers, which is a shame because I'm somebody who I don't feel the need to apologize because I don't want to be reading the New York Times on a device I have to charge all the time. I'm old school, and I like having a copy of the paper under my arm and reading the paper, and where we're going to be, everything's going to be devices, I think, limits things for some people. But what do you predict is going to happen along those lines in media?
I foresee a sea of hurt and a lot of very disappointed venture capitalists and even more disappointed public shareholders who have been sold a bill of very bad goods by the venture capitalists who got out just in time. But at the same time, I think we're going to see an incredible amount of content that we never hitherto imagined would be available to us. It's all going to be paid for by investors betting on the come, and they're never going to get paid off. And at some point, the appetite of investors to fund this stuff speculatively will probably disappear. Then will come a whole lot of consolidation, and we'll be left with what we're left with. And I just hope the New York Times has more than one section, because I depend on those blue plastic bags to walk my dog with. This man is making a film in New York. He dropped everything. He came down here. He has not charged us a dime. He did it because he believes in the future of media. It was the most gracious gesture. I give you Alec Baldwin.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Kimmy Regler, Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, and Jesse Brenneman. We had more help from Alex Friedland and Dasha Lizitsina. And our show was edited this week by our executive producer, Katya Rogers. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Casey Means. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Brooke Gladstone will be back next week. This week, I lost my dear brother and good friend. This is for Josh. I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.